At Her Spirit, we're here for you. We want to help you discover your potential, achieve your goals, ignite your fitness, find your community. Head to herspirit.co.uk and sign up for our core membership. Get access to our virtual classes, monthly challenges, expert advice, and track your progress in our health hub. You'll also find your very own cheerleading squad who will support you every step of the way. Use the code HERSPIRITPOD3 and get 3 months completely free. It's time for you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Her Spirit podcast. I can't believe I'm saying this, Annie. It's our review of the year.
It's so exciting, isn't it? Can you believe it? From all the way back, when did we do the first one? Back in March.
And we
were in London, in Soho, in a posh studio, and that happened only once. And ever since then, we've been on Zoom calls, but we've loved every minute. And I don't know about you, Lou, but it's just given me a lovely focus. And I think we've had a lot of fun and some amazing guests.
What my favorite one really making me laugh today, because to get us in the mood, we're both sitting there saying, right, let's do the podcast. And then I'm like, should we get our Santa hats? I love that we both had Santa hats literally like almost as our fingertips. And as ever, you look super glamorous in yours, and I'm wearing one that I've got from those Christmas Santa runs. I must have done it about 2 years ago. And I mean, yours is just so much better.
No, but the only thing is, yours is a bit wrong, because
mine just a Where's Willy one, in fact? It's maybe not even a Santa hat.
I'm not sure, because it doesn't really look like a real Santa hat. I mean, it looks Christmassy enough, because it's red and white, but you see, mine's got the white fluffy bit round here. Round the sort of like the edge of the hair, and you're red and white, and I'm white and red.
I think it's all wrong, but as you know, I'm hobbling anyway, so I can't go upstairs to look for any other ones.
No, and we need a little bit of an update on your foot. I mean, we can have a bit of a laugh, and I think initially it was okay, but it hasn't been that fun for the last week, has it, for you?
I genuinely thought when I last spoke to you, I think I was probably, as I say, suffering from a post-anesthetic, or not suffering at all, in fact. I was totally fine. It didn't hurt at all. And I just thought, oh, this is going to be a breeze. And then about 48 hours after I had the anesthetic, and, so many people have been in touch, you've had similar operations, and my really heart goes out to you all. About 48 hours later, suddenly the pain just absolutely went through the roof. But, it's fine now. I'm over a week now. I'm off most of the painkillers. In fact, yesterday, what it's like? You're sort of going along and then I'm like, oh gosh, it's 4 o'clock. I've not taken any painkillers all day. So suddenly you get better without sort of realising it. But I'm still can't put my foot down.
But you're not supposed to.
The glass of wine behind me is still there from last night.
A little bit of wine just to numb the pain is good. A little bit, just to all our listeners out there. Not too much, just a little bit. But I think just for anyone who's tuning in for the very first time, the reason you had the operation is because you've been running around on a broken foot, really, having run 4 marathons on it, all sorts of stuff on this broken foot. And you thought you had an injury and you weren't sure what was going on until you got an x-ray and realised the foot had actually been broken.
Yeah, and I think actually, so foot broken is one thing, but I think snapping a ligament is also kind of complicated, isn't it? I didn't realise any of this. And I'm now the proud owner of a new reconstructed ligament. So we'll see how it goes. And you've had some brilliant breaking news, Annie. I think all our listeners will be very excited to hear what's happened.
Well, yeah. I mean, after, much, much waiting, and to be honest with you, they were sort of, on borrowed time, the 4 girls in my garden, the hens. So we got them right at the beginning of September. And apparently we were going to have eggs within about 4 weeks or so. And then nothing happened. And then nothing happened. And nothing happened. And then Tim went to get some food supplies, and the guy went, oh yeah, actually, I think that batch of hens was a little bit younger than we thought they were. But so hang on in there.
Oh.
And then on Saturday, finally, what was Saturday? Was that the 5th of December? Zavi comes charging in with this mucky little egg that he found on the floor, which is so sweet. Because you can imagine those little hens sort of running around and suddenly go, oh, 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 What's that? Today we had more success because actually that we don't know which one it is out of the four, but we got another one as well. But this time it was inside its coop. So we think now that's it. We're done with buying eggs. Fingers crossed.
Oh, that's so exciting, isn't it? That's brilliant. So that's been one of our journeys during the podcast, hasn't it? And we've spoken to so many people. And what we're going to do, I know that lots of you have actually listened to most of the podcast. So thank you so much for your support. Without you, we wouldn't still be doing it. And over the next three episodes, we're going to kind of have a look back at some of our favourite guests. And we've enjoyed every single one of them. So it's kind of been difficult to choose.
Yeah, I think it's really important to say that every single guest has been amazing. And I think we've both said that has given us something new, different, something to go away with.
Yeah.
You know, from sort of right back to lovely Helen Jenkins, Jodie Simpson, our triathletes that came on board and chatted with us. And, you know, we're going to go through the list of them. But I think that, wow. I mean, honestly, when you think that we've had one of the Spice Girls on as well, it just goes to show how much, you know, the podcast has grown.
I mean, the one and only Mel C, who I've always adored, Sporty Spice. And she didn't mind, actually. She kind of likes that name now, Sporty Spice, doesn't she? And I did know she was sporty, but what we kind of learned during that podcast, I mean, you know, she and I bonded massively, didn't we? Because she's a sort of amateur, slightly less amateur, I think, triathlete like me. And she wants to get in the team for her age group, which I had no idea.
The amazing thing is we all sort of run around just maybe not realizing how much some people do. And you know, yeah. And that's what every sort of guest has brought to us. We found out something new about them.
So in this podcast, you'll be able to hear from Mel C, a little clip from Mel C. Also, one of my favourite guests was Alice Deering, the young swimmer. She was just absolutely, she's a marathon swimmer, which I've never spoken to a marathon swimmer before, Annie. I've watched them with huge admiration. She was really, as you said at the time, a kind of wise head on very young shoulders.
Yeah, and I think what she's doing is really amazing. And I feel really embarrassed to say this, but I was one of those people that she spoke about that just thought, oh, we don't see very many black swimmers simply because of their muscle density. You know, they're great sprinters, but they don't swim. And she quite rightly, and has proved herself, corrected us in saying that, no, that's absolutely not true. The problem is mainly is that, you know, culturally, it's not a sport that I guess that black people take up because they think they're not good enough, which, and as she said herself, absolute
it's
rubbish.
About messaging.
Yeah, anyone can do it. And she's proving that all the way.
And I'm so excited that we spoke to her this year because hopefully, fingers crossed, she gets into the Olympics. And then this time next year, we can talk to her and she will have had that, hopefully have had that experience. Whatever happens, she will have been, which would be amazing. One of the people I found left me with a really lasting impression, actually, was Sophie Radcliffe. So she left her job, didn't she? She had a very high powered job and she left her job basically to go out and set herself up as a kind of endurance athlete / adventurer and now makes a living from it, living this extraordinary, brave and courageous life, doesn't she?
It's hard, isn't it, to be that brave. Some people will simply think financially they're not in a position to make those choices. But actually, unless you try, sometimes you don't know. And I really believe that, you know, very few of us kind of, you know, reach those limitations of what we can achieve. And to be brave enough to go and do that. And I think, you know, as she said herself, you know, she was in a very safe environment, a great job, getting paid good money. She was managing quite a big team and going out totally into the unknown. And as you said, she has made a huge success of that. And I think another thing that was great about her is also what she's putting back into teenage girls. So she talked a lot about that support.
And Mel C also talked to us, didn't she, about body image and how that had a sort of big impact on her during her life. Another person who had a kind of completely inspiring and uplifting kind of attitude to body image was Eleanor Mills, who used to write for the Times and just has this passion, doesn't she? Kind of wild passion for swimming.
She does. And I loved her. I mean, we were so lucky to meet her in the flesh because she was, along with lovely Dr. Nigat, she was the first guest that we had and we were still able to do it in a studio. And I think meeting Eleanor is important because you are really able to understand who she is as a person. And what I loved about her is actually she kind of sticks two fingers up to the world and convention and how you've got to look. And actually she doesn't give you know, she doesn't give a damn what people think about her. Phenomenally bright. And also another woman in the world that's really championing women to get out there and be powerful and be strong. And I love the message she had and she gave us.
Yeah, and I loved, you know, I'm a swimmer and I'm very passionate about it. But the way she described being in the water, you know, she's a writer, isn't she? She speaks beautifully and eloquently and you know, very kind of direct but beautiful. And I love the way she described being in water because I can really relate to that.
Yeah, and this is a thing that I'm sort of finding out more and more from these podcasts. I mean, I knew obviously from you, I mean, it seems ridiculous me sitting here, doesn't it, as a triathlete that I was for sort of 15 years or something, going, oh wow, yeah, open water swimming, because you know, I've told my stories before about how much I hated the racing in the water. But actually what I found out from this podcast is the huge mental and physical benefit of swimming in open water. And I've still got one of my, you know, really close buddies, Lisa Yeoman, great friend for years now, is still swimming. She's still swimming. And
is she a friend of yours?
Yes, Lisa's one of my best friends. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, oh, they've got best friends all over the place, but she's a very close friend and we're actually working together on another project at the moment. I mean, it's 5 degrees. Oh my goodness.
Wow.
I just...
And I know her spirit is doing lots about the Winter Swim Challenge as well. And I know that Alice Deering, for example, is going to be, they've been doing fireside chats, which I'm going to come and listen to the next one. I think it's on the 20th of December. Mel's going to give me a nod. 20th of December, Alice Deering is going to be part of that.
Who were we talking to last week? We were talking to one of our lovely listeners, weren't we? One of our early Her Spirit. Yes,
Sharon.
That's right. Lovely Sharon. And she challenged you and said, have you been in the water? Are you still in the water? And you said, yes, I'm getting in the bath. What does that mean?
I can't swim, Annie. I think I will. When things are better and obviously everything's healed, I will go back. Oh my gosh. And why do I say these things? Because you're all going to hold me to it now. As soon as there's a lake that I swim in, and I think they might open in January, and I'm going to get back in that freezing cold water, Annie. One of our favourite friends is a very inspiring person, Deborah James. She's also called Bowel Babe, and she has stage 4 bowel cancer. She has talked about her journey and what she's been going through for so many times. She has blogs and she writes for a newspaper as well. I feel very close to her. I absolutely love her so much. And she came on our podcast and was really honest about particularly, you know, dealing with cancer during, you know, very, very difficult times.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I think of Deborah, I think of colour. I don't know why, but just bright, lovely colours. That's the way I, you know, what springs to mind as soon as I think about her. And anyone following her on Instagram, as you said there, Lou, she's under the name Bow Babe. Everything she puts up is fun and colourful, and she's dancing and singing, and she loves glitter and glamour and far more glamorous. I just don't know how she does it. She slips on a dress, doesn't she? And you just go,
incredible.
But the thing is, what's going underneath? And I don't think it's a facade. I think she has to live her life like that. And by living her life like that, she makes herself, you know, less worried about the future and what's going on. And it's not, she's not in any sort of denial thing about what's going on. She's, you know, on constant treatment.
Yeah. And exercise is really important part of her whole, how she, you know, she gets physical benefits, also mental benefits. And she also measures her recovery, doesn't she, in how she's able to run. And I know she's had an operation really recently in the last week or so. I think it was might have even been the same day as me, and she's kind of on the recovery from that. So just so much love to her, especially going into the next year. Shall we hear from her first?
Yes,
you think?
Definitely. Let's take a listen.
Here is our wonderful friend, Deborah James.
At Her Spirit, we know how powerful women can be. We love your strength, your determination, your compassion. We love the energy that sparks when we connect and spur each other on. Her Spirit was created to ignite that flame of determination, to unleash your energy, to build your self-belief, and to help every woman find a way to your healthiest mind, body, and soul yet. We want to inspire 1 million women just like you to be active, healthy and happy because you deserve it. Head to herspirit.co.uk, join our core membership and use the code HERSPIRITPOD3 to get 3 months completely free. Join our monthly challenges, get access to the Her Spirit Health Hub and track your activity levels, mood, food, sleep and stress every single week with your own personalised dashboard. Get expert advice and join daily live classes that can be played back at any time. Plus, find the support that you need to get started and stay motivated. Just sign up at herspirit.co.uk and use the code HERSPIRITPOD3 to get 3 months completely free. It's time for you.
So in terms of adjusting to new expectations, I think I feel like I've become a bit of an expert to this because I've had to do it so many times. It's literally a feeling that the floor has been whipped from beneath your feet and you're thinking, what do I do now? My best piece of advice is literally to take one day at a time. I think as soon as you suddenly think, oh, it's 12 weeks ahead, I can't fathom that. I can't fathom the idea of June or July or the kids going back to school, maybe even in September. When you think like that, you think, how on earth am I going to get through the day? Just think about the day. Think about, what is this day going to look like? How am I going to try to be happy? How am I going to get my exercise? What am I going to eat? And before you know it, actually, you get a lot of pleasure in becoming and living in the now. It's one of the hardest things that we can all do, is to live in the now. But right now in society, it's the only choice that we have.
I think that is like truly the best advice that anyone can take on board, just to take what you've just said and really believe it and feel it, because it's absolutely true. You know more than anyone. And, you know, just breaking it down day by day just makes it so much easier. You know, I mean, imagine you and me, you know, I mean, we've got lovely Lulu too, but she's got these, you know, big girls that are taking care of themselves, you know, with our sort of younger kids going, right, they're actually not going back to school until September. Ooh, swallow that one, you know. But if we take, you know, I'm going, oh my gosh, we've got to Friday already. We nearly tick 1 week with the kids off school and it doesn't feel bad. And actually, I feel like my week is so much longer because I've been able to enjoy stuff. Louise knows how much I kind of run around trying to pack, you know, a bit power mum, I guess. You know, I talk to her, I'm at the swimming pool. I talk to her, the ice rink, you know, I'm just all over the place. And I feel like I've packed so much more into this week because I've been able to breathe. And hopefully, you know, your advice of just taking it, you know, one day at a time, you know, if people can just take that on board, they can be a lot happier and deal with this a lot better.
Some very wise teenager said to me yesterday, it's time for us all to reset. And I know it's really hard and people are in very difficult, as I say, different circumstances, but actually maybe it is a little bit, maybe we can look at some of the positives, Deborah, that is a time to kind of look at what our values are individually, as families, etc. And then, you know, enjoy a little bit of slowness as long as you're not in a desperate situation. And then take a look at how we go forward, maybe, Deborah.
I think we have to find some positives in this situation. For me, I don't think I've ever cuddled my husband as much in the last week. I think that's a nice thing to say. I think enforcing ourselves to slow down is never a bad thing. I know that I run at 100 miles an hour and I think almost I need that external pressure to kind of slow down, watch a movie, take time for myself, and actually recognising that that might not be a bad thing for some of us. Learning new things that we've always had on our to-do list, but we've never had the time. Well, we've got the time. Let's do it now. So let's try and find the positives in this situation.
I'm just going to ask you both a couple of questions. So Sarah W says, what new things have you done since the stay-at-home regime was enforced? And Deborah, you're hugging your husband more. Anything else?
Since the stay-at-home regime, I've had to do a lot more cooking. And it's not, I do actually quite enjoy cooking, but I never have the time. And funny enough, I now have the time. So I'm just like smashing it through Jamie Oliver's recipes at the moment, making up some of my own. Nothing fancy. I love canapés. So I'm somebody who could do a whole meal of canapés. I'll like muck up like the main dinner, but like I'm quite good at cocktails and canapés. So I think I should like stick to that. And I'm working my way through learning a different cocktail each day.
Maggie T asked this of you, Deborah. She says, does your encounter with cancer, has it actually pushed you to make use of your full potential?
I would say that it's made me step outside of my comfort zone. So I would say both career-wise and personally, and to say yes to things that I didn't think, not that I didn't think I was capable of, but I just never thought I could do things. And you also realize how transferable skills are in so many different situations. And I think sometimes we isolate or lock ourselves into one pathway in life. So I'm not saying everyone give up your job and jump across, but at least be open that life isn't straightforward. And actually shaking things up can be quite a positive experience. Like, I've said yes to the London Marathon this year, although now it's being bumped, and I am, you know, incredibly excited about doing that. But I will never forget doing the first triathlon, because I think for me, getting over that hurdle of all the organization of just getting in the water is such a huge achievement for me, more so than running probably any race that I will ever run.
The London Marathon may be temporarily postponed, but there is a date for it. And you, myself and Annie, we're all meant to be doing it.
I know. Yay! I can't wait. The problem is for me. Oh, this is, see, I was okay to say yes for April. You know, I could do 4 months in advance. Now I'm like, I've got to live till October. I still have to be fit. You know, it's just like the ante has just upped so much for somebody like me. But anyway, I still plan to be there.
As we said, so much love to Deborah as she carries on with things. And I know she's had an operation. I know she's on the mend again. So best of luck, Deborah.
So, yeah, so much love to Deborah. I know she's doing well in her recovery and looking forward to a good Christmas. Next up, the wonderful Mel C.
Well, this is taking me right back, isn't it? Right back to my roots and beginnings. And I can't actually remember a time when I didn't know what I wanted to do. I think it was quite early on. I did a little performance somewhere and it became my passion. But alongside that passion of performing, there was a passion for sport. And I did everything at school, netball, hockey, football, gymnastics, rounders, athletics, you know, everything. And thinking about it now, I am a really active person. You know, it's funny, I was called Sporty Spice, and that was very much on probably my appearance and the clothes I wore rather than my actual sporting prowess. But I definitely have always seen myself as a bit of a sports person. And I've, over the years, I've met athletes, and, you know, they kind of, I think they feel like a kinship with me. I think there's maybe a similar personality trait, you know, when you're very determined and passionate about something. That's how I feel about my music. And that's also how I feel about my sport as well. And I think so, athletes and myself have often felt like we are, you know, similar in that way. At the time of auditioning for the Spice Girls, or the band that became the Spice Girls, I was also auditioning for Cat, the musical, and I'd been recalled for both things. And, you know, it was kind of like, what do I do? You know, thinking about being part of a girl band, I mean, is that a little bit flighty? Is that realistic? Is that going to be a waste of my time? You know, I trained to work in musical theatre. I had an opportunity to possibly go into the Dancers musical, you know, one of my other childhood dreams. But I think my passion for music was so strong that I really couldn't pass up that opportunity. And then, yeah, beyond it, oh my goodness, what else would I have done? I think I was very determined to perform. But the problem with being a dancer is it's quite a short-lived career. You know, it's really a career for very young people. It's very competitive. And just, you know, naturally, as you get older, your body isn't as capable as when you're young. So I think a lot of dancers don't really think of life beyond that.
I've read somewhere you said, when we're together on the stage, we were powerful. Mm. And that's what it was. You were a team. And that's a kind of message, a kind of girl power team, isn't it? That actually we are stronger, better, sometimes, in, you know, completely diverse, but actually better as a group together.
Absolutely. You know, in any workplace, you know, in any band, everybody has different qualities in a family dynamic, you know. And I think you have to learn to work with with that, you know, to really celebrate people's strengths, and then any weaknesses, you know, can be taken over and helped by other people's, you know. It's really about, yeah, it's the beauty of the dynamic. I think that's the thing with the Spice Girls. It's like, yeah, we're completely and utterly a team.
So, I mean, it was, you know, brilliant. And to achieve your ambition to be able to become one of the, you know, the most well-known, most successful girl bands of all times is amazing. But it wasn't always easy for you. And the media at times really made it very tough. And I think it's safe to say that it did lead to you having some, you know, quite serious sort of mental issues, mental health issues.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting because obviously I've had a lot of time to kind of reflect on all of this, and often people, you know, want to talk about it, and I've gone through having different feelings even about talking about it. I think when I first started talking about my depression and eating disorder, I'm not sure whether I was ready. You know, I think when you're dealing with things like that, you're extremely vulnerable. But I found myself in a place where I didn't feel like my life was my own. And it was almost like I had a responsibility to tell everybody what was going on. And I think also because of the issues I was dealing with, my appearance changed and I was very embarrassed. And I felt like I had to explain myself, you know. And for many years, I had lots of interviews talking about all of these issues, and it would just leave me feeling awful and terrible, and I regretted it. And then as I got older and I started to meet people that had really found some strength in me talking about whether it be mental health issues, eating disorders, anxiety, then I realized it was actually really important. And I think when I started talking about, I was diagnosed with depression in 2000. And at that time, we didn't really talk about mental health the way we do today. So I actually feel quite proud that I had that chance to really, you know, to open those discussions. I think especially because I was so young as well. Now I'm very happy to see that people talk about these things much more openly, and taboos are, you know, are disappearing. But it's, I think, still think it's incredibly hard, just the nature of those problems. It's hard to discuss them, to admit them to yourself, and to admit them to loved ones. You know, the thing I found really hard is that, you know, you have incredible people in your life, you know, your support network, whether it's your family, your close friends, your colleagues. But I personally found with those problems, I didn't want to be a burden to these people. So my advice always to people, if you feel that way, is to seek professional help. Because then, you know, it's their job and they know how to deal with it in, you know, in the best way.
I know you went, so you went to your GP, and that's the kind of, you know, because I talk about this about on BBC Breakfast the whole time, and we do say, you know, go to your GP, and that, you know, that is so much in some ways, you know, there are obviously helplines, there are support groups, but GPs are kind of, you know, one of the first ports of call, aren't they?
Yeah, you know, I know it's difficult. I know, obviously, a lot of doctors are under a lot of pressure, yeah. and you know, people have different relationships with their GP. You know, I felt very lucky, and I was introduced to talking therapies as well as medication, which, you know, which was a little bit trial and error. You know, there are lots of things out there that can help you, and it took me a while to find the right one. And then after a few years of that, I realized that I, you know, that wasn't what I needed anymore, but there was definitely a time when I needed some medication as well as speaking therapies. You know, these things are always very complex, aren't they? I was a dancer. I grew up spending most of my day, you know, criticizing my own body in a mirror, being around people, some of which had, you know, become victims of eating disorders. And it was something that I, you know, was never really, I never really felt that it would happen to me. I thought I was okay, you know, I thought I had good self-esteem. I thought I was, you know, I was pretty strong-minded and pretty balanced. And then, of course, throw being a Spice Girl into the mix, and everything just became a little bit chaotic. And I think a lot of the time, these problems can arise when you feel like your life is out of control. You know, it's a way of controlling. You can control what you eat. You can control, you know, how much time you spend in the gym. That coupled with being very self-conscious and having really bad body image, trying to conform, trying to be a way that you feel you're expected to be. So yeah, it was a mixture of things that kind of led me down that road. And it took me a while to get to the point where I was desperate to get help and get better. And then it took me even longer to get better. So,
it's been, there's so much there, isn't there?
Yeah, it's an interesting journey. Yeah.
Yeah. And people, you know, have huge amount of sympathy for you. And there will be many people who listen to this who will entirely relate to what you're saying. We've had loads of questions. This is from Nikki, really about this. She said, could you ask Mel C how she managed to overcome her eating disorder? You've answered some of that. Or does it still linger on in the background? And does she say her relationship with exercise is now a healthy one?
I'll answer the last question first, because that's the easier one to answer. Do you know what? Yes, my relationship with exercise is healthy now, thank goodness. And mostly because I can't be bothered to do too much because I'm too tired. I think, you know, as you get older, the aches and pains and niggles and being a mum and all the other responsibilities. But of course, I'm grateful for that. So my attitude to exercise, I believe, is a healthy one. With food, I think the majority of the population have an issue with food. I think it's something, it's in our culture, you know, especially with women, but men are kind of getting more, what's the word?
They can equally have issues, can't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that's what's so difficult with, obviously, you know, the issues with men. That's something that we're talking about a lot more now, aren't we? Mental health issues, you know, body image issues, eating disorders. Again, you know, for guys, it's something that hasn't been spoken about, that hasn't been acknowledged, but we're knowing that this is an issue and we do need to talk about it now. But I do eat well, I eat healthily, and I don't think I allow my thoughts and feelings to affect the way I eat, but I know sometimes that they're there.
Mel, a question from Alison. She asks, does Mel think the healthy image for young girls has changed over her career? And what advice would she give to her younger self?
I really have been happy to see how body image has changed. You know, obviously, fitness is such a bigger industry than it was in the 80s and in the 90s. You know, it was starting to come through. And what I love to see, there are so many women out there looking strong. Because in the 90s, there was this whole, I mean, I'm sure you guys remember, heroin chic. There was a lot of like really, really skinny, almost emaciated, whether it be people in music, models. It was the look, wasn't it, that people were aspiring to. And that, you know, that's really changed. I remember I was so tiny then, but I had like little biceps, and there was no girls out there with biceps. So it was, you know, and so it's just so wonderful to see now that what we aspire to is a strong, healthy body rather than, you know, an unhealthy, emaciated body.
I listened to your Desert Island Disc, and right at the end, you said that you want to be in the GB team in your age group for triathlon. Well,
yes,
come on.
Yes. Well, it's so hard. I mean, I know you compete and you are amazing.
Yeah, but I'm older than you and I'm slower.
I love triathlon. I was invited in 2011 to do, it was Virgin Active at the time. They did the London Tri, and they were getting a load of celebs in. It's a big publicity thing, isn't it? And people were doing, you know, when they do those relay teams, and you're like, what's relay? Relay shrelay, give me the whole totally. Thing. Yeah. So I went into it like knowing nothing. I had a few little swimming lessons and did a bit of open water stuff. And yeah, I'd done a little bit of cycling and I'd always ran. And I just fell in love with the sport because it's like having these three different disciplines, it never gets boring. If you don't want to get wet, jump on your bike. If you don't want to get on your bike, just put your trainers on. You know, there's always something else to do. And I found my body was in the best shape. I had no injuries. It was amazing. And after my first one, I enjoyed it so much. I kind of got into it more, like, you know, getting some more training and understanding. And yeah, I got my, and it's been sporadic for me, mainly because of work, being able to compete or being able to even train enough with traveling and touring and all of those things. So the last time, it's been a few years now, but the last time I did London, I got my PB and I was, I've done London three times now, and that was the first time I'd done London being over 40, and I got my quickest time. So, and my wave in the swim, we went, there was two waves that went like just
you go through the
other.
Wave in front.
I had to go through. So like, I could have been quicker. That's so annoying. Why?
No,
why was it
at
the front of the second wave? What?
Annie, when we started, if somebody told us we would have got a Spice Girl on our podcast, we wouldn't have believed it, would we? No way. So from a Spice Girl to somebody who loves climbing mountains, and actually she inspired us to go and do the same, but unfortunately we couldn't. But here is, I defy you to listen to this young lady and not go out and sign yourself up to something. Sophie Radcliffe.
Where did it all begin? How did it all start? Was it something that you picked up and as a kid or as a teenager? Or, you know, when did you sort of stumble across this massive passion for extreme sports?
That, you know, it does amaze me sometimes. I think, how did I actually get into this? Really, the best way I can describe it is it's a feeling inside me, a desire to challenge myself, to find out who I am, to push my limits, to kind of counteract the negative influences in life, the people that, you know, told me that I wasn't going to amount to anything when I was younger, or the world kind of wanting to put you in a box and tell you that you just have to stick to one thing. And, you know, that like so many of us feel that we're not good enough and struggle with that confidence and that bravery to go and be ourselves and live our lives on our terms. And that was really how I got into this, because the first time that I challenged myself, I realized this is how I'm going to figure out how to be all those, the answers to all those things that I just said to you. I was basically, before I did the Alpine Coast to Coast, I was this 27-year-old girl sitting in an office in London, doing a job that I didn't enjoy, wasn't fulfilling me, desperately knowing and believing that there was so much more to life, that there was so much more to me, that there was a whole massive world out there. And finally, I plucked up the courage to go and explore it. I also do like little things like when I'm on a challenge, like this year, last year, I cycled the North Coast 500 in Scotland. And I, every morning I would get up, and even though I was like cycling 90 miles a day, I would get up, plait my hair, plan my outfit, just little things to remind me that I'm not just this person that's cycling all day long through wind and rain or whatever else, and, you know, sleeping, weather. I'm actually still Sophie, and I still like to, you know, make myself feel good and look nice and stuff like that. And I think those little things make a big difference as well.
So people listening to you will just think, wow, this, she's absolutely amazing and inspirational. Would it be fair to say that previously you would not have described yourself as a natural athlete? Would that be fair?
Well, that's totally fair.
Is it? I feel a bit mean.
Yeah. No, I know. I couldn't say I was really unfair. I felt like I spent a lot of my life being like, overweight and just like, no, I never really got running. I always just was one of those, you know, I believed I could do it, and then I'd get to the end like way behind everybody else, really sweaty. Everyone used to tell me that I was really unfit because I used to get red face when I do exercise and sweat a lot. And like now, same thing still happens to me. And you go to the gym and girls often kind of apologize for being sweaty after workout. And I was like, no, like that's good. You know, that shows that we've been putting in the work. But yeah, you're right.
So how, I mean, you know, so not a natural athlete, you say that I don't believe it, but you know, that you were kind of, you're last, etc. So it's a big change, isn't it?
It's a massive change. Honestly, it's a whole lifestyle change. For me, it's about my mindset. You know, it's about building that mindset and you know, it's just that strength within me. And that's why I wanted to do these things, was to prove to myself that I've got that strength and that resilience, and to kind of create a you know, be the person that I want to be in life, and be, know that I can rely on that person. So when, you know, when the storms come, when things get tricky, I'm like,
Sophie, you can rely on yourself now because you've put that person into practice. The message is absolutely not follow in my footsteps. Do not follow, you know, or even in your amazing footsteps. What we're asking people to do is to think about whether there's something that they do want to do that will make them feel the way that they want to feel about themselves and about their lives. And if there is, no matter how difficult or how scary or how petrified they feel about doing that thing, go and do it.
The other thing I've read you said, I think I'll try and get the quote right. Fitness is about what I can do, not what I look like. And I think that's such a insightful thing to say.
I really believe in that a lot because, you know, I do feel pressure to kind of look a certain way. And, you know, and the reality is we're all just born differently. We all have just different genetics. So no matter how hard I train or how much I might go on a certain diet, I might never look like another person, you know, another kind of fitness person or athlete, for example. So whilst going through my own, like for me, doing these challenges was a massive game changer with my own body confidence and body positivity, because it made me realize, okay, I might not look like these images that we're fed from when we're tiny, when we're children of how we should look. But hold on a sec, I just went and climbed 3 mountains in one day. And that literally changed my mindset. I was like, well, maybe my body is great the way it is because it's doing all these amazing things and I should be proud of that. One of the things that's been so phenomenal in this whole journey I've been on is the fact that it has been a journey. And I know that sounds cliched, but it's just opened up so many different avenues of my life. And one of the things that's been so amazing about that is the people that I've met. And it's like, if I, you know, when I went and started doing triathlon, you join the triathlon club, you know, you learn about the kit, you learn about nutrition, you meet people, you might go on a training camp in Mallorca. You know, it's like looking at these life experiences that can come from it, the people you can meet, the ways it can open your mind. That just, that's for me is like the most phenomenal thing about being alive is that journey that we go on and how you just don't know where it's going to take you.
Whatever your age.
Yeah, you have no idea, you know, and I think whatever your age, you can always try something new.
And I know one of the brilliant things you do and you're extremely passionate about is sort of talking about exactly this to young girls. And that's something that I've, you know, really, people always ask me, okay, Louise, so, you know, how can you help young women, teenagers to kind of embrace sport as a magic medicine like you have? And Sophie, you work on that really hard, don't you?
Yeah, I run a program called Trailblazers, and it's called Trailblazers because that's my mum raised me to be a trailblazer in life. And I just think it's, you know, it's basically the whole premise of the program is to give girls, to help them build that confidence, courage, and also the skills that they need to navigate the modern world. Because I kind of felt like, you know, you get through the whole of education and all of a sudden, I wasn't actually prepared for the world. Like no one teaches you how to bounce back when someone's bullying you and you've got, you know, negative influences. Like it's really hard to navigate all this stuff, especially with social media and the pressures that they're under. And some of the experiences I've had from Trailblazers, from their workshops and the talks and the adventures I've taken the girls on have just literally been the most incredible experiences of my whole entire life. And it's so phenomenal to bring the girls together, to help them break down the things that are holding them back and just help them push through that. And they're not all sporty. You know, I did this adventure camp at PGL and one of the girls was there and she was sitting on the side and she wasn't talking, she wasn't engaging, she wasn't participating. When it sat next to her after a bit of a conversation, turned out she wanted to draw. I was like, you can sit here and you can draw. Participation is the most important thing. And just pushing yourself at the level that's right for you doesn't have to be that you don't have to climb Jacob's ladder to do that. If you want to sit here and draw people climbing Jacob's ladder, that's going to make you feel happy and inclusive and like you challenge yourself. Let's do it.
And what are the big issues that they face? I mean, you mentioned social media. You know, that we talk about it all the time on Breakfast. So social media is bad. I don't think it's all bad, by the way. But what are the big pressures that they're facing, do you think, and the most difficult things for them at the moment?
They are under a huge amount of pressure academically, just in terms of I don't think they have enough time just to be themselves. They're just constantly working. That's one thing. then the pressure that they feel to constantly fit in and be accepted is massive. So I do this one exercise with them, which is about being resilient in a judgmental world. And it's always like the most the most emotional exercise, because it brings up this stuff that they've been holding back for so long, and they feel they can trust people around them to share it. But basically, what happens is when they talk about the things that they're facing, the judgments, it's like there's all these rules, but they're not written rules; they're just unwritten rules. Constantly, you're too fat, you're too skinny, you're too clever, you're too stupid, your hair is too this, your hair is too that. It's like they can't win. Wherever they go, there's somebody judging them, saying it's too much. And it's coming from their friends, from their peers, from school, from social media, from their parents. It's coming from inside their head. It's coming from every single angle. And the girls I work with, they're sort of invisible. So that they're already girls that aren't necessarily strong characters, you know, and they basically make themselves seem invisible to protect themselves from any more negativity than they already have. And that is a real shame.
Do you know, even you describing it has made me feel, you know, kind of stressed in lots of ways. So how do you help them out of that, in wanting to be invisible?
So like one girl, her challenge was that she only ever wore black, because it was one less thing for people to have to, you know, criticize her on, was her clothes. And, you know, so her challenge the next time I went back, she told me, "Sophie, I've started wearing the clothes that I actually want to wear again." And I was like, that's huge. That's you expressing yourself. Like, okay, so how do I do that? I think a lot of it comes down to actually caring for them, seeing that potential in them, and dedicating, like when I go in there, they know how much I care about them, and they know that I really want a better future for them than the ones that they currently believe that they're going to have. And it's us together getting on that journey together and being like, you know, I can't do that work for them, but I can facilitate it, and I can create a scenario where they feel like they can trust people in the room. You know, they've got an identity through Trailblazers. Like, they feel like they're part of something. They've got meaning to their lives. They've got a sense of purpose. It's all these things. And it's giving them a voice where they feel like their voice doesn't matter. And actually saying, hold on a sec, your voice really does matter.
So when you listen to Sophie, you're absolutely right. There's no way that you don't want to go out and sort out some sort of amazing challenge in your life. What an amazing girl she is. Next up, one of my favourites. I mean, she really is the brilliant Eleanor Mills.
So where do you find joy?
Well, I love to swim. Ever since I was a tiny child, I've been a fish. In fact, some of my friends kind of call me a bit of a fish. When I was a child, I would never get out of a swimming pool. I literally had to be like kind of fished out by my parents. And I love being in the water. I think really I'm kind of some kind of dolphin / whale, depending on how I'm feeling about myself on any particular day. But I'm always happier in the water. I find it massively meditative. And often problems that have been running around in my head, or if you've been trying to kind of fix a long article and not quite sure how to do it, or you've got to have a difficult conversation with somebody, or thinking about kind of family, it's often during that swim that you're kind of very much in a different kind of a zone. And then often by the time you get out of the pool, you know the answer.
It took me a long time to get to that point. And I think some people listening will think, oh, you know what, it's really hard doing the run, or it's really, do you sort of mean? So I genuinely found it very, very long time before I could just get in a pool and just kind of let it go.
I find I always count. I count lengths slightly obsessively, and I kind of vaguely kind of keep an eye on the clock. But it's something about the rhythm of the arms going in and the breathing, which is, and just all you think about is how many lengths, how many breaths, and there are vague thoughts. It's a bit like when you're meditating that things come into your head and kind of go away again. But I kind of like the fact that really what I'm concentrating on is ploughing up and down. I can feel my heart beating and my breath.
So it's like a connection with your body and your mind, is it?
I think so, definitely. And I can often get in feeling quite stressed, and by the time I get out, I feel relaxed.
I think all three of us can really relate to that.
I think it's really important for women to prioritise that thinking time that you get when you do some sport for yourself. And I've always worked and been a working mum and had two kids. And when they're little, you feel really guilty. I used to feel any moment that I wasn't in the office, because I was in the office a lot, I should be at home with them. And actually what I realised over the years is that unless you put a bit of something back into yourself, you can't be a good boss, a good mum, a good wife. That you need that kind of meditation time or that time just to feel a bit better about yourself to actually be able to function.
I remember I have read some research, and I wish I could bring it to hand right now, but some research specifically around that thing about feeling guilty.
Yes.
That exercise, moving, sport is exactly was what selfish, you said. You know, is selfish. Yeah. So to all those people listening who have that kind of, you know, and I even have it sometimes as well. I just think, oh, maybe I should be doing X, Y or Z. But what would you say to them?
I think give yourself permission to do it. Mm. And I say this to so many. I mean, I've mentored and coached and had so many younger women, particularly mums, working for me. And one of the things that I really say to them is that you can't be a good mum, you can't be a good boss, you can't be a good wife if nothing in your life ever replenishes yourself. And I think that going and, for me, spending, you know, 20 minutes, half an hour in the pool is an investment in my family, in my mental well-being, and just being able to keep myself on the road. Because if you get exhausted and you're ratty and you don't really have that kind of cushion, you know, everyone knows like what that's like as a mother. You're or what I call the second shift, that you get back from work, you're exhausted, you know, the kids are going, mum, 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 the husband's going, what's for dinner? You know,
the washing machine's going, I'm full.
Yeah, exactly. My worst
and the
thing,
dog's barking because he wants the ball to be thrown, and the cat's staring at because she
the
wants
washing,
to be
fed. The washing, though, is always the straw that breaks the double. The candles, yeah. The wet wash in, yeah, the machine. Yes. It's just like, I'm like, no.
Oh my God, I so get that.
Yeah. But I think that just taking half an hour of your day to do something for yourself, everyone in the family benefits.
So that was sort of what you were touching on there was sort of my second point about how you look, because I, to my absolute eternal shame, gave up swimming. So I was a swimmer like you, and I was a competitive swimmer.
Right.
And then age 15, you know, I was winning races, and I loved the racing, and I loved it. I loved, like, you know, the, yeah, training, etc. And age 15, I looked in the mirror, Annie, and I saw my muscles and I saw my shoulders, and I didn't like the way it made me look. And right. I thought it made me look too muscly. And I honestly, I feel terrible saying that, because this is a message I don't want to pass on to anybody or to my children. And I gave it up at a very important time in my life when I was doing my GCSEs. Actually, I did O-levels. You probably didn't. You're too young, you two.
Last year of O-levels.
Well, yeah, okay. Yeah. So, in a stressful time in my life when actually I had family stress, I had exam stress, and I gave up something that was, you know, mentally very good for me, physically very good for me. So how do we, you know, going back and speaking to, you know, listening, people listening who think, you know, I don't like this, I don't like my muscles, you know, that is a message that, you know, I wish I could shake up my 15-year-old self again. Come on, Louise, you love sport. It can make a massive difference to your life.
Well, I think I always liked, I'm very busty, so I always liked the fact that I kind of felt it like balanced, having slightly kind of broader shoulders kind of balanced off my,
yeah,
kind of natural bustiness. Yeah. And I'm quite kind of slim hips, so I didn't really mind,
yeah,
that kind of silhouette. And I also just think that the pure pleasure of being in the water for me kind of outweighed those other things. Yeah,
I genuinely, I mean, you're making me feel quite not sad, because I've come back to it, but I feel like I've really missed
lost
out
years.
Lost years.
Yeah. I mean, I've
do not lose these years, ladies.
No, definitely
I've really encouraged my daughters. I've got teenage daughters to go on swimming, and they both really love swimming and do it a lot. And I think that's probably because ever since they were born, I've kind of made them swim in cold water. Everyone thinks our family's crazy. We kind of go to the beach on a day when it's raining, it's absolutely horrible, it's windy, and we'll all get into our wetsuits and go in and go surfing.
So healthy aww, for them. Yeah.
And they love it. And I love swimming, you know, in Scotland and the lochs, which is cold. I mean, I do wear a wetsuit. I don't like being really, really freezing cold. But my girls will get in anywhere and swim. And that's one of the things as a mum I feel most proud of, because I think, and I also think it teaches them not to be afraid of kind of strange places, that you can kind of encounter kind of environments which look are quite hostile and find some pleasure in them.
That's so true, isn't it?
and they've just always done it since they were small. And it's really funny when you go with other families who kind of don't do that. They think we're the mad locks, is what they call us. That's my married name. It's like, oh, the mad locks
that swim in the locks.
The mad sea locks are kind of going into the sea on this freezing cold day. But my girls love it, and I'm glad I've really passed on that pleasure to them.
Where do you think you got the drive from? Because looking back over your career, where you started in university, you read English at Oxford, you went on to work for various newspapers, The Observer, you were the only female trainee in the newsroom. You know, I mean, I guess, was that driven by your parents, or is it just something that's very innate, the boldness that you have? And even in an era where, you know, women will look at and go, whoa, you know, we don't have women in the newsroom. And you're going, no, hang on a minute, we do, and I'm here.
I think I've just always had quite a large personality, and I think as a teenage girl particularly, you're always being told that you're too much, or you should be kind of quieter. Or my father used to say, darling, how you do make remarks about things, because I kind of
remarks,
and I was always used to say to him, yeah, well, Dad, I made a career out of making remarks. I was a columnist, you know, that was what I did. My remarks became kind of my absolute, the lifeblood of my career. Yeah, exactly. So I have a real thing about kind of young girls that we have to celebrate that confidence. And I see so many young women and young girls who are quite sparky, and the world tries to knock it out of them. I just went to San Francisco to interview Sheryl Sandberg.
I love that interview, by the way. Just brilliant. Putting out there, go and read it. It's brilliant.
Facebook, if anyone doesn't know her.
She's the CEO of Facebook. It was the cover of the Sunday Times magazine for International Women's Day. And I've wanted to interview her for a while, and I went and talked to her. And I had a really interesting conversation with her and her chief of staff, who's an amazing woman called Caroline, who's got 5 children. And we were talking about how that kind of excess spirit gets knocked out of little girls. They're told that they're too much, or it's a kind of embarrassing, or it's not ladylike. And if I could wave my magic wand, it would be to make women with spirit, that kind of amazing kind of, you know, authentic confidence, really value that. I wish as a society we value that. This goes
right back to what this podcast is called. It's called Her Spirit.
Yes.
And I was out last night, which is very unusual.
Louisa's got a hangover.
It's normally me, so I'm just so happy it's not me today.
We're really smug that it's Louise with a hangover.
Yeah, I'm really smug.
I feel quite terrible, actually. It was to celebrate the 100 miles in the desert. Anyway, so go back to that. You know, it's called Her Spirit. And I do think, you know, there is something that we need to harness and celebrate. And whether it's around, you know, today we're, you know, particularly in Her Spirit, talking about, you know, mind, body, fuel, etc., exercise. But there is something special, you're right, that we need to all celebrate in each other and kind of, you're right, empower as well.
Yeah, and I really hate it. I mean, there's a real... Sheryl Sandberg's thing was around ban bossy. We shouldn't describe young women or people who got, you know, leaderly, confident young women as bossy. And she wanted to ban it. I wrote a column at the time saying I thought that was wrong. Mm. I think we have to embrace bossy. We have to kind of embrace those qualities in women which make them kind of leaderly and bossy and kind of, you know, quite big for their boots. And as someone who spent my whole life kind of feeling like I needed to fit myself into a kind of smaller box, physically, kind of personality wise, I'm kind of really determined for the next generation that they shouldn't feel like that. Because actually, if we're going to get women who are massive entrepreneurs and tech founders and prime ministers, they need to be kind of big personalities and to be able to express that. And there's not enough in our culture that gives women permission to do that. It's one of the things that I really want to do now that I've left the Sunday Times and I'm moving on.
I'm so excited for you, by the way. Go on.
No, I have to read this because I love this. It was an article interview that you did in Campaign.
Right.
And I think this kind of really sums you up and who you are and the advice and what you want to put across out there to all women, I guess, not just young women. But you say, ultimately, I advise any young woman to be brave, go for it, and above all, speak up. Your opinion is just as valid and pertinent as everyone else's. We need more women to have a guiding hand on the first draft of history. But to do that, women have to step up and realise that everyone is scared and go for it anyway. And I love that because everyone is scared. You know, even the men out there are scared too, you know.
So. But they kind of are allowed to go for it in a way that they're not. I mean, there's a thing, isn't there? I mean, what what is the kind of acceptable face of female leadership? I don't think it's an accident that so many kind of female leaders who the world likes are tend to be very beautiful, or kind of, you know, ex-actresses, or even the ones who are businessmen, someone like Helena Morrissey, who's had 9 children but looks like a supermodel. I mean, there's the kind of the pulchritudinous bar is pretty damn high. And I think that's about them being acceptable to men, that because they're particularly kind of fragrant and beauteous, that the men can kind of handle them. And I really think that women are not really going to get to proper equality until some of those kind of notions about how you have to, Sheryl Sandberg talks about it as likability, until women are a bit less worried about that, being liked, so, or being pretty, or kind of being kind of approved of by the chaps. It's that kind of would you kind of terrible phrase.
I get this of would you, that's awful.
Awful. Yeah, but I mean, I've heard that so many times in the newspapers. It's kind of, they'd all look around each other and go, would you, you know, kind of as if that was that kind of hotness kind of quality was what allowed the kind of woman to be part of the club, even if she was doing something just completely unrelated to what she looked like. And that's what we need to smash, I think.
What I also get a lot, which I find, and, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about this another day, Annie, as well, is because I do endurance sport, and because, you know, everybody goes, oh, Louise, you're so competitive. And that sounds to me like a pejorative word. Yeah. And also, it's not true of my actual kind of
myself. You're
competitive
with yourself. Yes. You want to challenge yourself, but you don't want to stand on the start line and go, I'm going to beat you, and I'm going to beat her.
Yeah,
and
I don't, do I, Annie?
No, not at all.
But also, what's wrong with women being competitive?
Yeah,
that's a good point.
I'm really competitive. You know, that's this thing around kind of bossy, competitive.
Actually,
that, that the world sees that as an unlikable quality in women. Sod it. If we're actually really going to get to kind of parity, or to run things, or to do things,
you need
to be really competitive and gritty and sharp-elbowed. And
maybe gritty's better. Maybe, yeah. I just genuinely, when people say to me, I find it kind of insulting, because I think what they're saying,
well,
is what Annie says.
The world sees it as a pejorative thing for women, but it's not. A man who's seen as competitive is seen as kind of leaderly and on his game. And,
yeah, you know, isn't it great?
That's what we need to own, I think, as women, and not let us say we're not allowed to be competitive, we're not allowed to be leaderly, we're not allowed to raise our voices.
Yeah.
I've had to think about this a lot in the journalistic space, because, of course, for millennia of evolution, women have been told kind of to be seen and not heard. If you were likeable, you were much less likely to be, you know, kind of raped or beaten up by a man, or women have been the kind of weaker sex and therefore had to kind of play up to those tropes. And I don't think we need to do that anymore, but I think culturally it goes incredibly deep that in women that they have to do those things. And that's what we need to train our daughters now out of, if there's going to be meaningful change in the next generation.
So true. I mean, what a brilliant point. It really is. It's that conforming thing. I mean, I had a conversation with my daughter yesterday, who's 11, and she's very capable. She's not a show-off. She's bloody lucky, actually. She's bright and good at sport and all those kind of things. She's not built like me. She's stronger and a little bit stockier. And she came home and said, oh, Mummy, you know, I'm kind of like the big one out of my friends, which I can absolutely say she's not. And it's the first time I've ever heard her speak like that. And I went, no, hang on a minute. What you are is really capable, and you're really sporty,
and
you have big lungs, and that's why she's kind of got my big...
strong, you know. Let's admire her for being
and
strong.
And I think in the end she's kind of switched off. She went, all right, I've got the point, Mummy. And so hopefully she has, and I will keep reiterating that, because actually, why conform and just feel like you have to be like all your friends that are perhaps, don't do as much sport as you because, you know, they don't want to or whatever. It's like, be who you are, absolutely.
But also, what's the terror around bigness? I mean, I have a kind of, that was another one of my kind of preoccupations. I met Michelle Obama. She's enormous. You know, she's like 6 foot. She's a large lady, you know, not at all in a pejorative way. She's beautiful. She's fit. She's commanding.
Strong, I would say,
strong. Venus Williams, Serena Williams. I mean, what's wrong with being a strong, powerful woman?
Absolutely nothing.
I think we need to own that rather than talking pejorative about it as being big. You know, I hate that. I've had that my whole life. And it's kind of, why do women have to come in small, delicate, fragrant packages?
And for the moment, I think we'll stick with swimming. So Eleanor Mills loves swimming. I mean, she swims outside, but also inside as well. But this young lady really impressed me. She's a marathon swimmer. She'll explain what it is. Here is Alice Deering.
Yeah, so a marathon swim is a 10-kilometre swim in an open water body, so a lake, a river, a sea. And on the elite stage, the elite international stage for women, it takes maybe just under 2 hours, typically around the 2 hour mark. So it's a long, brutal race that kind of feels like it goes on forever, but goes really quickly at the same time.
Annie, just give us sense of perspective of that. Or you can do that as well, Alice. You know, 10K in 2 hours is so fast. I mean, for example, I have done a couple of 5Ks, Annie, and I think I did them in like one hour and 40 minutes, and I'm not a bad swimmer. So, Annie, how do you put that in the kind of like in context for us?
Well, it's phenomenal swimming. I mean, I think from when you look at marathon swimming, Alice, I mean, you started obviously off in the pool, you know, and you've built up as a swimmer from starting with 50 metres to 100 to 400 to 1500. Mm-hmm. I know you're 2-time silver medalist at national champ level, which is amazing. But I think for me, the open water swimming, it's so mental, isn't it, to keep yourself driving forward, because obviously you do the training, which we'll talk about. It must be absolutely absurd the amount of kilometers you swim a week, but mentally is where it's really tough in open water swimming, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Standing on the start line, looking out in front of you and seeing a buoy about a kilometer away and thinking, okay, I've got to swim to that, and then I've got to swim a bit further around and go around this whole circuit 4, 5, maybe 6 times, depends how big the laps are. And I don't have my own space. I have to compete for spaces with other swimmers. I have to fuel myself properly during the race, which means going to a feeding station, grabbing a drink or some kind of substance from a cup, ingesting that whilst you swim and then carrying on. So it's an interesting sport, which I wish the viewership was a bit higher for it, because it's not a very viewer-friendly sport in one sense.
Well, you say it's not viewer-friendly. I mean, I guess for people who love swimming, I love to watch it. I love to watch the different strokes. And it's funny what you say, because you don't have your own space in the water. It's not like being in the pool where you've got swim lanes. And I have seen, I can't remember if it was the Olympics, was it with Kerri-Ann Payne, was a fight right to the end. And they were literally almost having this like fisticuffs coming into the finish of the race. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, honestly, it happens in so many races where it's really like the passion and drive from each swimmer. Everybody wants it so badly. And I don't think it's ever any really hard feelings when we touch the finish pad and if something's happened in the race. Typically, whatever there is, I try to stay out of it, because it can just drain your energy. Like, I've had it before. You get into a bit of a scrap with someone, you come out and you feel deflated. So, but especially when you're going into the finish, every stroke matters. It's all about getting your stroke rate up to be able to touch first.
Oh my gosh, Alice, there's so many things. I'm just so impressed by this. I really am. So tell us, so go back to the food thing. So you're allowed to stop and you take in, what, a gel or something. So that's very important, because otherwise, you know, you'll run out of energy, wouldn't you, by the end of a race this long?
Yeah, exactly. So the way the feeding station works is on each lap, or sometimes twice on a lap, there's a feeding station, and your coaches, team managers, whoever from your team will hold out, like for Britain, it's like a 5 metre long pole with a cup holder at the end.
Right.
And they will put in the cup of drink, which for me is a gel mixed in with an isotonic drink. So quite like a viscous substance. Oh. And honestly, when I'm swimming around, especially in seawater, it is a treat to be able to have that drink just to refresh my mouth, because obviously 2 hours in the sea can get so dry. And feeding stations, if you ever have time to look on YouTube, maybe Google FINA World Cup feeding station, so you can get an idea of the chaos, the absolute chaos that goes on. We're trying to see who we have to go to, so we get the right feeding stick. They're trying to find us to aim the stick towards us. So and it's hard to tell who's who in such a scenario for both the swimmers and the coaches.
And I guess you have to be really disciplined, Alice. I mean, if you don't take on the food, yes, you might gain a few seconds over your competitors. But, you know, I think we've all done it. And you can see people even in high-level marathon racing where you just go, oh, I'll just miss this feed station. Mm-hmm. You've got to be disciplined to make sure you take that food on because, A, swimming burns a lot of calories and, B, you're out there for 2 hours. If you don't take something on, you're not going to finish the race in good shape.
Exactly that. And it's so tactical on what laps you feed on, checking if other people are feeding at the same time. I typically kind of never have a strict strategy because I'm kind of like, I'm the person, if I haven't stuck to it, my mind will be like, oh my God, you haven't done what you were going to do. And then it would be more detrimental than if I just kind of have a go with the flow attitude. So I just kind of see what the race is doing. If people are looking like they're feeding, I'll go in. The rule generally is you never really feed on the last lap because obviously that's when it's go time. But I guess if you're in first position and you're feeling good, why not?
So it's just like, it's like Formula One for swimming because that's what they're doing, isn't it?
Yes, I say this. I'm like, Formula One is a very, very more expensive version of open water swimming. Ours is obviously a lot slower and there's a lot less risk involved, but they are very similar in the sense of like strategy and timing.
I'm interested to know, I mean, obviously you're so young, Alice, 23, you're doing amazing things. Have you seen already in the small time that you've been involved with the Black Swim Association a change in attitude?
I like to think so, yeah. We're working with Swim England and Speedo and a host of other aquatic bodies who have real weight and power behind them to drive this change forward. And I like to think that even just by us having this conversation, more people will become aware of this issue because it's very easy to forget that swimming is a life skill. Like, for example, when you say, oh, I can't ride a bike, I feel like that's always met with more like, oh my God, really, than someone saying, I don't know how to swim. That's how I see it anyway. But I really hope within the coming years, like we are talking years here, we have to change cultural mindsets and stereotypes, but I really hope within the coming years we'll see like real changes in the statistics that we're dealing with.
On the website, I looked at it today, it says, you know, we talked about barriers, saying they're entrenched and complex. So, and, you know, given what I've just said, that they're entrenched and complex, what do you see as the main barriers?
Oh, okay, yeah. So, one of the main ones is the kind of societal racism that has told Black people over decades that they can't swim, that they're not swimmers, that they float, that they don't float when they get in the water, their bones are too dense. And I think everybody's kind of heard this myth in some form over their lifetime. And I didn't hear it for years when I was swimming. And I maybe heard it when I was about 13, 14. And I went and told my mum, and my mum was like, what, really? So like, she was quite shocking to hear it initially because like she had never been told that herself, thankfully. I had never heard it. So we'd kind of never had to deal with that element. But people do, they have to deal with this stereotype that is placed upon them and repeated to them by not only within their culture, but like I've still heard swimming teachers within this decade tell swimmers, tell adults that, oh yeah, Black people can't swim. It's just not for them. So we're at the Black Swim Association, we're looking into doing like research into disproving this claim. And because, I mean, we've got an Olympic champion in the 100 meters freestyle who's Black, like, and also Cullen Jones, Ali Atkinson, Simone Manuel, who's the Olympic champion I referred to. These are all incredible swimmers. And you're telling me that their bones are too dense, that they can't, float. Like there's something wrong there. So we're really looking to disprove this and again, break down one of those barriers that stops people from wanting to swim.
That's it for our first review of the year, Annie. I'm going to improve my Christmas hat by next time. Maybe have glitter instead, okay?
I think you need to improve. There's not many things that you can improve on, Lou, because you're nearly perfect. But that Christmas hat needs to go.
I'm going to bin it. See you next time, Annie.
Bye.
Hi, my name's Mel Berry and I'm one of the co-founders of Her Spirit. I hope you've enjoyed today's podcast. These podcasts would not have been made possible without the support of the brilliant MediChecks. MediChecks offer an easy and affordable way to check your health with their simple and personalised blood tests. From hormones and nutrition to cholesterol and diabetes, there is something for everyone. Just go to MediChecks.com to find out more. Have a great day.